Hi, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter. Good morning to you. That is Nick Wright. Good morning to you, sir. You got 27 pens. We're good to go. But before we do, we want to pay tribute to our nation's military veterans, part of the fabric of who we are and who we continue to be at Fox Sports for 25 years. Over the course of the morning, we'll have a group of active and retired servicemen and women here with us in studio, mainly to side with me when things get out of hand between these two. Welcome. The Bucks blew the doors off the Warriors, 134-111. Even worse for Golden State, Steph Curry suffered a strain to his left abductor. He'll have an MRI this week. Warriors also without Draymond Green last night. Nick, what was your reaction to what happened in Golden State?
Let me just go to the Bucks quickly. The Bucks are a real contender to come out of the East. This could be a finals matchup. Mm-hmm. The Bucks have, I believe, the best player in the East. They are all of a sudden defending at the level they always should have been able to with that length. They actually are shooting threes for the first time in years this year. So that's a real team. On the other side of things with Steph, this is the only fair knock on Steph Curry as a player. He can get dinged. He's going to miss some time. He's missed time with multiple ankle injuries throughout his career. Mm-hmm. We've seen a couple soft tissue injuries now. This is the downside to being, I don't know if we can blame this injury on his size. I don't even know if we can blame the ankle injury on his size. But, like, he's a guy, of all the great players we have in the league, the truly great, great players, he and Anthony Davis are the two that you got to say going to miss some time throughout the course of the year. He is playing the highest level he's ever played going into last night prior to the injury. I hope he's not out an extended period of time. I would imagine they will be super conservative with him because they're the Warriors and they don't actually need him. But that is the only knock on Steph is he gets dinged up.
Yeah, Nick, you talked about him playing at a super high level. What do the numbers say from a historic standpoint, shooting the basketball, like starting the season?
So his effective field goal percentage, which is where they incorporate threes being worth more than twos, all this type of stuff, he's at around 65%. To give that some context, LeBron's most efficient year ever in Miami was at 61%. Anthony Davis this year is around 50%. He's at 65%. Durant, think about what a great year Durant's having.
Yes.
Durant's at 59%. Like, Steph, what he's doing, this was the first game all year. Of course, he didn't hit a three. He had a stretch where he'd hit at least five threes and I think seven straight games. I think most people thought, no one would ever do what he did his unanimous MVP season. Up until the injury last night, he was duplicating that plus about 10%. He was playing at a level I didn't think was reachable again, which is why this injury is such a bummer for NBA fans, whether you root for the Warriors or not.
Do I need to find a new guy now?
No. He's still your guy.
Jenna's been jinxing people. Is why, if you remember yesterday, she said, but also yesterday, she said, I'm going to get on your corner, Nick, with Cam Newton. And
guess
look what happened. My corner, she's been anti-Cam Newton all year. He playing MVP level. She hops on Cam's corner one day, they lose.
All right.
Hops on Steph's corner.
Listen.
My question is, in the abductor injury, is that his left groin, right groin, middle groin?
Why don't we worry about that in a commercial break? After being out of football since April, Dez Bryant wasted no time getting back in. He practiced with the Saints for the first time yesterday. Head coach Sean Payton said earlier this week he wanted the 30-year-old wide receiver to lose a little weight. Those are fighting words in my circles, which is, I come from like 10 minutes away, so not big circles. Coach also said Dez could play as early as this Sunday when the Saints play the Bengals. Here is Dez Bryant after practice yesterday.
Who wouldn't want to play, with Drew Brees? not taking away from nobody else, but you got a guy like Drew Brees. Like I said, you got a guy like Michael Thomas, Watson, Alvin Kamara, Mark Ingram. Got those types of guys, little baby goats, around here. I'm going to always be me, who I am, and I'm not a bad guy. I've always been a good guy. You can ask my teammates and my ex-teammates how I am. I love the locker room, it's like family. Every locker room that I've been in, middle school, high school, college, is out to the pros, has always been like a family. Have a natural bond. It's more than just being in a locker room. It's outside of it too.
What's the vision that they have for you in terms of just what you're going to do for this offense?
I'm leaving that up to coach. Whatever you have for me, I'm gonna get myself ready for it.
All right, CeCe, We know that Sean Payton said he'd like to perhaps use him this week, but how soon before he can actually make an impact in this offense?
I think a couple weeks. Now, they could throw him out there. They could throw him out there, but I don't believe, especially with some of the stuff that he said. Now, I do believe Sean Payton, from a coaching standpoint, he has an advantage. Yeah. When you have a player like that, is he going to play? Hey, I like him. Oh, man, he's looking good and everything. He's at practice. I would make the Bengals prepare for Dez Bryant. I would make them look up some film of what Dez Bryant does well. I would eat up the time that we have, because in the NFL, everyone's got the same amount of time. But if I can make you spend more time doing more things, how great are you going to be at the really specific details? So I believe Sean has an advantage in doing this. I still think it takes a couple weeks. Now, Drew Brees, can he get Dez Bryant open? Can he throw him open? Yes, I do believe that, but I believe he will be compromised, and he would set himself up for another injury that would give him a setback that they might not see him play until December. So for me, I would be concerned. He missed Wednesday's practice. He was at yesterday's practice Thursday, which is a very intense practice. Today's practice is not that intense. And then on Saturday, they're going to be traveling. So I wouldn't expect him to play this week, but as we talked about, in a couple weeks, they got one game circled on
November
that calendar.
November 29th.
Where they're going back to Big D, and I'm sure that at that point, Sean and Dez have talked about potentially probably that being his coming out party.
A couple days ago, Dez Bryant, they needed him to lose weight, right?
Yes.
About 5 pounds heavy. He's not playing this week. What Sean Payton was doing there, where he says, I'm open-minded, is the thing that Jason Garrett and Jerry Jones and the Cowboys should have done with Amari Cooper, which was leave some doubt about what the status is going into the game.
Not tweet the game plan.
Well, and so when the Cowboys traded for Amari Cooper, they were so heavily criticized for giving up the first-round pick. They told anyone who listened, oh, not only is he going to be worth the first-round pick, he's going to make an impact starting this week. He's going to be featured this week. So when the Titans were preparing for the Cowboys, they knew that wasn't going to be wasted time. Mm-hmm. They weren't studying Amari Cooper film kind of half in, half out, like, ah, should we be doing something else? They knew they were going to have to use it. Now, so I think he is doing what using to his advantage the idea that they could use Dez Bryant for the exact reason C is saying, but it wouldn't make sense for him to be able to play right now.
When I came out of retirement, I had played 15 years. I decided to retire, went into broadcasting. The Miami Dolphins, I thought it was after week number 6. On a Monday night game, they lost 3 receivers. Their general manager, Rick Spielman, called me on that Tuesday as the team finally got back down to Miami and asked me, hey, Chris, what kind of shape you're in? Now, I had decided to retire. I was working in television, working here in New York City inside the NFL on HBO. And he asked me what kind of time could it take me to be in shape. Now, my mind had retired. Now, I still had a pretty good workout regimen, but my mind had retired. Dave Wannstedt was the coach then, and they said, man, we're going to bring Chris in. I think he needs to lose a little bit of weight. But, you know, I believe that, man, we might be able to see it. It's promising. We went to practice. Pat Surtain and Sam Madison were playing man-to-man. Man, I had one of those kind of days immediately after practice. Dave Wannstedt said, listen, we're going to get you ready. You're going to be starting. You're going to play. Now, I was 37 at that time, 36, soon to be 37. Dez is 30. Dez's mind and body had not retired. So if he was able to play before that and play a limited role, yes, I could see it happening with Sean Payton. Norv Turner was the offensive coordinator then. So Norv came up with a little package and got me ready like after a bye week, which is still 1 week longer than Dez has. But I'm just saying, at that age, at 36, Dez is 30. Can it be done? Yes, it can be done, especially you have to have an offensive-minded coach like Sean Payton to be able to take care of him.
Listen, that's an awesome story. Here's why I don't know how much of it applies in this situation. By the end of your time in Minnesota, C, you were teaching the offense to people. By the end of your time in Minnesota, you were, when the quarterback didn't know what the play was or couldn't spit it out, you were spitting out for him. By the middle of your time in Minnesota, halfway through it, you were All-pro wide receiver, doubling as wide receiver coach mentor for Randy Moss, teaching him how to play your position. Dez is none of those things. That's not a knock on him. It's a compliment to you more so, because what you were doing was above and beyond. So I say that to say this. I do not, even if he's football ready, even if his body's ready, is his mind ready? Is he able to do things that aren't going to slow down the Saints' operation? Are they? They don't necessarily always pay.
That's play a good question.
They don't always play at a super fast pace, but they like to be able to. And so things like that to me are now. Could they potentially, if they're going to activate him, have him just for jump balls in the end zone? Right, if we get to the 5-yard line, have him go on the far side of the field, something he's always been very good at. Like that, I don't think you could screw up. So, yeah, potentially, but I wouldn't see us. I don't see a scenario where he plays this week.
So to piggyback off what you're saying, which was what I was going to ask, and you guys make a great point with this. I was going to say, well, what can Mike, a guy like Michael Thomas, learn from Dez Bryant, who's been in the league? You know, we know about Michael Thomas, phenomenal work ethic. He's in tremendous shape. Doesn't need to do anything else at this point, and then you have a veteran like Dez Bryant come in. Could he serve that role in some capacity this weekend?
You have to realize Michael Thomas, he's had one of those kind of, I wouldn't say a charmed life, but he's been around sports because his uncle's Keyshawn Johnson, who happened to play wide receiver. So Mike, he's been traveling around with football players. He's got relationships with other guys. I'm sure that there can be some connective tissue to what happened to Dez Bryant around the middle of his career. And when he sees Michael Thomas, he's going to be like, man, I have never worked with a wide receiver who works harder than Mike Thomas. His workout, even at this stage of his career, Drew Brees talked to me about it. Sean Payton talked to me about it. It's infectious to the other players there. So I do believe that there is something because Dez played at a high level, and he did it. Man, I'm sure that there's some type of regret, and I'm sure that Dez coming in there, he know that's Mike's room. Right. He know that's his team. He know that Mike is on the come up as far as getting a new contract. So I'm sure Dez, and you could see yesterday, I had never heard Dez in Dallas locker room say, hey, man, whatever the boss say, you know. Right. No. Yesterday, you could see he knows who the boss is, and that's Sean Payton.
All right, listen, America, I'm going to reveal a little confidence here. It's Friday. My man C has had a great week. He's feeling very happy. He's excited to watch some football. He's being very nice right now. And C also has been critical of Dez Bryant in the past, and now he's getting another chance. And Chris, no matter what interpersonal relationships are, Chris is always rooting for guys to succeed. So I'm going to say what part of Chris's brain wanted to say but didn't. Man, Michael Thomas doesn't need to learn anything from Dez Bryant, except for maybe a few things of what not to do if you reach the heights. Michael Thomas, keep doing what you're doing. Don't let maybe Dez can learn a few things from Michael Thomas. That's what he wanted to say. But we got our troops in the studio. It's Friday. He's
God
in a great mood.
Troops.
Our boss
God
is
bless
here.
The troops.
So
it's
he's trying to put
Friday,
a positive
baby.
Spin on everything. Michael Thomas, you don't need to learn nothing from Dez. All right, man, you just keep doing what you're doing.
Awesome.
If you can help Dez out a little bit, that's fine.
God bless the troops.
Yeah, there
and
you
there
go.
You go.
Thank you.
Period, point blank. Coming up, could the Patriots be on upset alert after winning 6 in a row?
Ooh, I'm going to tell you something.
Next up,
I'm
going
to stop talking to you. That's for real. That just happened.
Yeah.
Back here, first things first, former head coach Eric Mangini is joining us now. Hey, coach.
What up, Coach? Good morning.
Nice to see you. All right, so the Patriots head to Tennessee to take on the Titans on Sunday. New England's won their last 6. But the Titans have won their last 1. So the Pats aren't taking them lightly. My point, the Pats don't take anyone lightly, at least not in public. Bill Belichick referred to the Titans as a really good, well-balanced football team. All right, Coach, so what's the key to avoiding the upset here against Tennessee if you're the Patriots?
You can really look back at the last 18 years, and you're not going to find one press conference where Bill Belichick doesn't say nice things about the opponent. So
yeah.
We'll just take a step back there. I'd say the difficult thing, the first time that you play the Patriots as a head coach, when you're familiar with that system, and they've got Mike and they've also got Dean Pease, the former defensive coordinator, is trying to really get your guys to understand what it takes to beat them. And there's a lot of things that you can take advantage of from inside knowledge, and there's things that you need to avoid from the same perspective, but it doesn't translate right away. But the starting point is going to have to be long, sustained drives. They've got to keep Tom Brady off the field. That's the first thing that they have to do. And then the second thing is they've got to make Marcus Mariota be effective as a runner, because New England's going to take away that aspect. And when Tennessee goes, it goes because he's able to make some plays that are either outside the pocket or design, move the pocket plays, and that helps everything else with this offense. So those are the two areas where I think they need to concentrate.
Mariota's coming off what I think was his best game of the year against the – now, it didn't look like it was going to be that way when he had the strip sack that he lost early in the game, but he rallied from there. What I the Blake Bortles game notwithstanding this year, it's very hard historically to beat this Patriots team if with a – below average quarterback. So Belichick's record, and you might say, well, that's the case with everyone. Belichick's record over the last 18 years against young quarterbacks, against non-Pro Bowl quarterbacks, against quarterbacks that have some glaring weaknesses, which I think Mariota does, is he's up 90-plus percent in all of those categories. So why do I bring that up? I think for the Titans to have any shot in this game, it's got to be a huge run game for them. They have to try to do to the Patriots what the Patriots did when they started their winning streak, which is crush people with the run game and use the threat of the pass as a complement to it. Because I don't think you can take Marcus Mariota and the weapons the Titans have on the outside and use that to your advantage in this football game. I know the Titans are going to struggle with whatever scheme the Patriots cook up offensively, whatever the Patriots see in the film room as this is what we're going to exploit as the Titans' weakness. So I think on the other side of the ball, the clearest path for Tennessee is to rush the ball consistently right at New England with the Henry-Lewis combo and see if that allows long possessions where Mariota doesn't have to do much until you get to the red zone, which is the one area of the field in his career he's been excellent.
Can Tennessee's defense dominate this game and lead them to winning? Because you can't, when you look at the numbers, there's no way you're looking at Tennessee's offense thinking that, wow, they're going to be able to score 28
right.
points. They haven't been able to do that. Tennessee's offense, points per game, they're 29th in the NFL. Points per drive, they're 24th. Yards per drive, they're 30th. Yards per play, they're 30th. So that's some of the worst offensive football
passing
you're going
offense,
to see.
They're 30th.
On the other side, defensively, overall defense, they're number one, points per game. Red zone defense, they're number one. So you have to try to balance this out to be like, man, I need that defense to be able to turn New England over, potentially score on defense, and offensively, how do I attack them? I'm going to try to do a little New England to them. I'm going to try to shorten up the game. I believe that Derrick Henry's got to play a more significant role than he's played earlier this season, and I'm going to slice and dice them with Deion Lewis, their guy. I'm going to put those linebackers in space because I know Belichick's not going to have those linebackers trying to guard Deion too much. That's where I'm going to try. I'm going to try to make it third down and short and try to get conversions, keep Tom Brady, and play to my strength, which happens to be my defense coach.
And defensively, what you have to do is you have to give them something they haven't seen. And New England does that to everybody all the time. But if Tom Brady comes out, and we'd say this in the meeting room, if he knows it goes, if he knows what you're in, it's going to the right spot. So the ability to disguise coverage, the ability to give him something that he's got to adjust to, and then have a second pitch in the second half. Because once they go in and talk about it, they usually come out and light up whoever they're playing. You need to be able to do something else that's a little bit different in the second half. And Mike knows that. Dean knows that. And it gets back to my original point. Can you convey the importance of that to the players? Can they really understand it that this first time that they're facing him with this coaching staff? Mariota as a runner, the run-pass option, the more of that
yes.
that you can keep mm-hmm. pushing, forcing them to deal with him as a true runner, that to me will open up things in the passing game and help him have a chance.
Nick, how much have these two teams changed since that divisional playoff game last year? How much are the game plans going into this one? How much
different? Well, I mean, the Titans changed head coach. So, like, that's the most significant
right.
change.
And typically we don't see that.
Right. If you got to the divisional round of the playoffs,
yes.
you won a playoff game, a huge comeback against who? Oh, the Kansas City Chiefs. Last year, who was the quarterback in that game, coach? So, so that's the biggest change. The Titans' personnel is more consistent this year to last year than the Patriots is, at least who the Patriots are going to be trotting out this game. Mm-hmm. Last year in that game, obviously, they didn't have Julian Edelman. They'll have him here. They did have Gronk. They won't have, or they probably won't have him here. Like, the Patriots, to me, have had more turnover of personnel, but the Patriots also are the most consistent team in football as far as what their schemes are. They kept their offensive coordinator. Now, they did lose Matt Patricia, but are you seeing anything from the Patriots defensively this year that's different under new coordinator than last year? Because I'm not. Like, it seems like that's Belichick's defense that the – am I wrong?
Well, when you say consistent, the thing that is consistent is they're not going to be consistent.
They're going to change.
Yeah, every week it's changed because – you're going to play Tennessee a lot differently than you play the team that you faced the week before.
But they're all changes, like, within the family.
That, right.
Within the framework of what they're doing. Yeah. Now, there's some things that have been mixed in that are different. And anytime you add a new personality as a play caller, tendencies tend to change when you blitz. Right. Matt Patricia blitzed a little bit more than they're blitzing now. So there's some smaller things that go to the human being that's actually calling the plays.
Yeah, one thing from a personnel standpoint I should think that people should watch is, let's not forget the subplot of Malcolm Butler. Didn't play in the Super Bowl, was dressed. Belichick benched him. Now, I'm going to tell you a lot. Belichick knows a lot more about football. And because Malcolm Butler played so bad in those two previous games, on paper, he would justify his benching. Now, Tennessee, man, they went out and paid Malcolm Butler a lot of money. They thought he was going to be a tremendous add. He has not been. He's played bad football. His confidence is gone. He got beat up last Monday night by Amari Cooper. And you can believe Tom Brady sent a message when he was benched. Oh, Malcolm, he's one of my buddies and everything. They're coming after him. I believe it's going to be a very emotional game for him going back to New England. But they're going to target him, and they're going to target him often. So, Tennessee, please give him some help in that game.
I can't believe Belichick was right.
And look, it's buyer beware with any players that the Patriots let go or want to trade you. Like, there's probably a good reason why it happened, and you see it every year. If someone goes and they pay someone that's no longer there a ton of money, and it's not quite what they hoped it
would be. You mentioned they might go pick on Malcolm Butler. Is that something that is just... Is that unsaid? Is that something that is part of the game plan? Is there any? Because Belichick, while he knows what was said around the Super Bowl, he heard all the questions he had to answer for 6 months, even though he wouldn't answer them, about benching Malcolm Butler.
Belichick is like it should be in America, man. He does not discriminate. He don't care who you are, where you are, what your name is, where you are from. What do the numbers say? And Malcolm Butler's been a huge deficit to their defense. So we just, I happen to know some of the intel about him also.
Yeah, and they won't go out of their way to try to force a ball on Malcolm Butler to justify getting rid of Malcolm Butler, but there'll be certain weaknesses that they understand he has,
and they'll wait,
and when the time comes, they'll set him up, and that's when they'll go.
He had a really rough game a couple weeks ago. He's in a rough stretch right now.
All right, Coach, stick around. Got to take a break. Coming up, are the Steelers looking like the favorites in the AFC? That's next on First Things First.
I'm Command Sergeant Major Rodney Plamondon here in Kandahar, Afghanistan, with the 40th Infantry Division, California Army National Guard. I want to give a big shout-out to the Oakland Raiders and Raider Nation for life.
All right, the Raiders definitely need his love. Maybe not Chicago didn't before, but the Raiders could use a little overseas love.
Well, they might be able to use his arm. Throw motion he had there. Quarterback tryouts this offseason.
Yeah, we need to get some troop to fill in for them. They need to go to Oakland and find them. All right?
Back here at First Things First with Coach Mangini. Today we are honoring our active retired servicemen and women, and a special thanks to the 4th Infantry Division, California Army National Guard, currently stationed in Afghanistan. Not to you guys. All right, back to last night's game, Panthers at Steelers. But let's face it, this was really just Steelers at Steelers. Pittsburgh had everything working last night. En route to a 52-21 win, Ben Roethlisberger threw for over 300 yards, 5 touchdowns. James Conner, their heralded running back this season, had to leave with a possible concussion late in the game. But here is Big Ben after last night's win.
It's a good feeling to play a good football team. I mean, we know they're a really good football team, and they came out and drove down the field and scored, and we're like, all right, we're going to, you know, this is what we expected. We got to put up a lot of points, and, you know, we did that, and the defense, they were playing like their hair was on fire, and so it was a lot of fun for all parties involved.
We were fortunate. The ball was rolling downhill tonight. You know, you'd like to think you're that good, but you're probably not.
All right, Coach, so the Steelers have now won 5 in a row last night, probably the best, most complete game of this 5-game win streak. What did you learn about the Steelers, judging from this win over the Panthers?
Well, to me, it was more just confirmation about what we talked about early in the season, where the sky was falling, just like we talked about with New England. This team, as long as they have Ben Roethlisberger and the complementary weapons, have a chance to do that to anybody any given week. And I've been in that position when I was with San Francisco, and it goes downhill, in Pittsburgh and the floodgates open and nothing seems to work. What I was most impressed with is the way that he spread the ball around. So many different people got involved.
Nine.
So it doesn't matter who you're trying to take away, someone else is hurting you. And he does a nice job of involving everybody who's on the field. And then it gets to the point where defensively you're going to the sideline saying, well, what do we want to take away that next drive? And you're trying to deal with a problem that you just had or a problem you had the drive before, and you come out and he creates another problem. And then you add all the things that he can do with his feet to extend plays. Look, these guys can hang 40 or 50 on anybody any given week.
And coming into the season, there was going to be a lot of questions. We knew on the defense. But on the offense, people didn't say much, but Todd Haley had left as offensive coordinator. How was their offense going to run? How were they going to change it? Were they going to change the terminology? Or are they going to make the new offensive coordinator just teach all the old stuff? And just as I thought, they made him teach the old stuff that they were doing. But as you can see, week number 8, 9, he's starting to add some little wrinkles. Because last night, there was a few plays I was like, I didn't know who was going to get the ball. And the way they influenced the defense on certain misdirections, making you think the ball was going somewhere else as far as motion. They did a bunch of little creative things. So I think their offensive staff really needs to get a lot of credit. When you have a great quarterback like Ben, he's going to be able to distribute the ball, which really helped the offensive coordinator. So for me, that's what I thought was one of the really, really bright spots going into last night. Number one for Cam Newton, though, that first turnover. 7-7. They score on one play, Pittsburgh. You cannot make that play early in a big game on the road like that. You can't try to force to give it. Take the safety. So what? You give them 2 points. You punt it off to them, a safe kick, and so what? The score's 9-7. It is not the amount of momentum that defense creates with a pick six. So that Cam Newton trying to throw this ball to Greg Olsen, he should have taken the safety there. That was a bad decision by a good player.
And I know later in the show we're going to talk about this with Coach from the Panthers' perspective specifically, so I'm going to wait on the Cam commentary for then. But on the Steelers, to me, This last night's game and this streak and the last few years have been a confirmation about how they do business and that they are very similar, not quite the exact same, but very similar to Green Bay as far as their free agency philosophy. Not a whole lot of guys on Pittsburgh that weren't drafted by Pittsburgh. They just draft so damn well, man. You look up and down the roster, James Conner, one of their guys, they drafted, they saw the value, they developed. Juju, drafted, saw value, developed. Antonio Brown wasn't some blue chipper coming out of college. Like, they drafted him, saw value, developed. Those defensive ends they got, Cam Hayward and Stephon Tuitt, these are guys that they had put value on. J.J.'s little brother. Like, aside from Joe Hayden, I can't think of one of their premier players that they went out and acquired. They develop players' talent. They are excellent at figuring out in the draft who will work in their system and getting the most out of those players. And that's what can allow, one of the things that can allow Big Ben to have that many options of who to throw the ball to.
Well, let's also look at the organization. The organization is built on a model of continuity and consistency.
Yes.
And patience. And those things are critical, and it gives them a chance to build up reps not only within the actual team itself, but in the draft room. What are we looking for from a Pittsburgh Steeler in free agency? If you're going to make a trade, all those things are incredibly helpful. And when we talk about force multipliers, this to me is a classic example of that. You get some guys that are lower in the draft, and Ben makes them better. We're not always talking about, God, we got to get him this weapon. We got to get him that weapon. We got to help Ben. Ben helps everybody else. And Vance McDonald, who I had in San Francisco,
yes,
goes to Pittsburgh. He's working with Ben, and you get to see his potential because Ben's able to bring that out of him by who he is.
Yes. That combination between him and Jesse James, the wide receiving core, the running backs they can throw at you. That's why I said from an offensive standpoint, man, they present a lot of problems, and they got a lot of good athletes that they can put in space that can run with the ball after the catch.
And whenever you score 50-plus, we're going to be talking, and we should, most about the offense. But the part of this that has to be, if you're a Steeler fan, most encouraging is this is the fifth, not only fifth straight win, this is the fifth straight excellent defensive performance. The fifth straight game you've held the opponent to 21 or less. The Panthers drove down the field and scored on a very surgical first possession. The rest of the game, they had one elongated touchdown drive until it was garbage time at the end when it was a 40-point margin. Like, what the Steelers defense did yesterday was just a continuation of what they've done over the last month of football, which is get back to the level of defense they had been playing pre-Ryan Shazier injury.
Well, let's also look organizationally at Le'Veon Bell. So if you're a Pittsburgh Steeler, you're dealing with the Steelers, you know that they're going to mean business. You know that they're going to hold their ground. You know that if you want to pick a fight, that they're going to stand their ground, and that sends a pretty strong message across the board. Now, whether you agree with it or disagree with it, you at least know what you're getting from the organization.
Well, they may be getting Le'Veon Bell back next week. The deadline is Tuesday, and then James Conner. We're going to wait and see how he's doing. He's in concussion protocol. All right, Coach, we'll see you later on in the show. Coming up, will the LA Rams bounce back after their first loss of the year? That's next on First Things First. All right, we'll get to the Rams trying to rebound in a second, but first, all right, guys, check out this amazing touchdown grab by Alex Backman of Wake Forest.
All right, okay, Backman with the back shoulder fade. What you need, Nick? What's up?
No, go ahead. I want you to.
Oh, Backman, let's do this, bro. They got black jerseys on. Opposition. Hey, wide receiver coaches out there, teach your kids wear the opposite color gloves that the opposition has on. Why? So the refs won't see you when you put these two hands on his shoulder pads and push off. Also, Alex, get one hand down by his waistline. Referees will let you get away with the waistline. Can't push him up top by his numbers and everything. They're going to call that one on you, homie. That's a free tip. Wide receivers and wide receiver coaches out there. Bat, bat.
My favorite is that wear the same color gloves as your opponent's jersey. That's a great tip.
On to high school football in South Dakota. Check this out. Two-point conversion run by Austin Thu stalled, but he tosses it back to the quarterback, who then throws a completion exactly how it was drawn up.
All right, see, you probably didn't even notice this, but that's eight-man football. There ain't 11 people on the field right there. And you probably didn't notice left tackle illegally downfield.
Yep.
They thought it's a running play, so he's out pushing into the end zone. That's why you can't throw the ball there. What you doing?
Yeah, Nick, you probably didn't realize this. You got to get up awful early to get up before CC because they don't even play 11-man football in South Dakota.
What? They do somewhere. They can't have it.
In the whole state?
State law?
Okay.
Okay.
Read it. Tell your staff.
Tell
your staff of eight.
Look it up.
All of them with an IQ of over 150 combined. I'm talking about all three of them. Dusty,
on to the NBA. Celtics Suns. Marcus Smart, the steal. The no look to Jaylen Brown.
All right, this game ended up being an excellent game last night. The Suns looked like they were going to shockingly blow out Boston. Boston then comes surging back based on the strength of CC's guy, Kyrie Irving. They win in overtime. This is a very nice pass and play by Smart and Brown, though.
Kyrie's a new player after the haircut, a shower, and a clean shave.
I had to deal with Chris Mannix texting me last night. Mannix, I'm going to block your number, bro. You wasn't texting me early in the year.
Oh, we got another random dunker in a dimly lit gym from an interesting perspective.
Look at that.
Now, that's a vertical leap right there. He goes off 2 feet. Over his homie, and then dunked
the
it.
Extension, man. It's a bold play,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he had to because with vertical, he jumps off of 2 feet. You're not gonna propel yourself forward as much. So he almost miscalculated.
That's what
that
I'm
one.
Saying. Yeah.
I'm sure there's some other outtakes that aren't as good as this one. I'm sure there's some other one too. Where homeboy's cornrows is getting grazed. Yeah.
All right. Let's talk Rams. The last remaining undefeated team is undefeated no longer after losing to the Saints last weekend. Rams look to get back on track facing the Seahawks Sunday, even though they took their first L. Head coach Sean McVay believes his team's ready to bounce back.
I think, you know, whether you're playing a great division opponent like Seattle or anybody, you know, what you love about football is whether you win or lose, you don't have too long to be able to dwell on that. You got to be able to in our situation, you know, learn from it and you move forward, and that's what you love. You couldn't wait to get back to work and kind of put it behind you, but make sure you don't avoid some of the things that we have to do better collectively as a team moving forward if we're going to, you know, achieve the outcomes that we want to be able to consistently get.
All right, CeCe, what are we expecting from the Rams after they took their first L from the Saints?
If you look at who their division rivals are, like, this was going to be a highly contested game, a game with a lot of energy. Seattle has dominated that division. The Rams knew when they came back to L.A., man, this is the team that we have to beat, Carroll. This organization, man, this is the team that we have to, whatever we set up, we got to make sure that it's going to be good against this team because this is who we're going to be going against in the Seahawks. So there's a great deal of respect there. I expect the Rams to be able to bounce back. I think that they'll take that loss in New Orleans, utilize that to go on another winning streak. And I believe that Seattle is the first victim. I believe they're going to spread them out. They're going to make Seattle play nickel-dime defense, hurt them in their secondary, and they're going to try to get off to a fast start. Now, they're going to, the Rams are going to try to start trying to make people look bad. When you start coming down the stretch, I know that some of the Rams defenders, Marcus Peters, I know he was very upset with some of the stuff that Sean Payton and guys said. So they're going to get an opportunity to be able to go back onto the field. And after being on a long winning streak, the most important game is that next game. Because now all of a sudden, say they slip up, lose a divisional game. Now you're talking about home field advantage, other little things like that. Now they're on a two-game losing streak. So the first 30 minutes, that first half of the football become very important for the Rams, and they have been special when they've played at home.
I know the Seahawks defense has been great because, of course, they have, even though all the personnel changes, top five points, top five or top 10 yards, like top 10 pass defense, top 10 or third down defense. So because of the Seahawks and Pete Carroll, the defense is going to be great. Despite that, I think the Rams are going to be able to score points. Like, the Rams have been able to consistently score points as well as anyone in the league this year other than the Saints and the Chiefs. What I am most interested in watching this game is there have been two Rams defenses this year. The Rams defense against the bad quarterbacks and the Rams defense against the good quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. They have eaten alive the bad quarterbacks on their schedule. And the good quarterbacks on their schedule have eaten them alive. The good quarterbacks on their schedule have thrown 13 touchdowns to zero picks, have a 120 passer rating. The guys that you would look at through this half of the season that are not on that list, three touchdowns to seven interceptions with a 68 rating. We know where Russell Wilson is. He's already played a game where he was in that good category against them, where he played well against them. I need to see this Rams defense, even without Aqib Talib, now that you've got another week with Dante Fowler in the building, now that Marcus Peters should be a week healthier, even if he's a week more humbled from what happened last week, I need to see this Rams defense have the performance I know they're capable of against a good opponent, a good offensive opponent. I'm not worried about the Rams' offense at all. I think because of Todd Gurley, it's going to be one of the most consistent offenses week in, week out in this league. I want to see how the defense does against Russell Wilson.
You mentioned it. Marcus Peters took some issues with what Sean Payton had to say about how that Saints game ended. Do you put most of that loss on the Rams' defense? Do you two think that the key to this game is going to come down to what the Rams can do on that side of the ball?
No, because when you go back over the game, the Saints had a tremendous game plan. How Drew Brees is going to get the ball out, how they were going to isolate the linebackers in space. Their protection for the Saints was very, very good for Drew Brees. So, no, the Rams had a great opportunity. They came back, got into it.
Yeah.
They really exerted a lot of energy and built get back into the game. And with the game on the line, one of the most critical plays, they had a one-on-one matchup, Michael Thomas versus Marcus Peters in the slot, and Michael Thomas wins that battle. So it was a significant play because of the totality of it. If he was able to get him on the ground, maybe hold them to a field goal there, you can't give up that type of big play. He guessed the wrong way.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why the Saints were able to get that margin there at the end. So, no, I don't blame him for it. I like the fact that he stood up for it, didn't make any excuses as far as injury. There was motion there. There was bad communication between him and his teammates. He wasn't having any of that. He told the reporter, man, miss me with that. It's my responsibility. So that part right there, Jenna, was very refreshing.
But for Marcus Peters, this second half of the season is very important for him. He's a guy who wants a new contract. He's a guy who's playing for his first real money in the NFL. He's also a guy that, because of the way he exited Kansas City, because of some of the outward, what people would call political statements he's made, and because he is a boom or bust player, he will make a lot of huge plays. He still, since he came into the league, is top three in the NFL in turnovers forced, but he gives up big plays. There, for any of those reasons, there are certain teams that are already, I don't know if he'd be on our free agent list. Like, for him, it's very important that the second half of this season, he reminds people the player that was an all-pro in Kansas City. Because thus far, even prior to last week's game in Los Angeles this year, he hasn't been playing at that level. Now, there hadn't been a game where he got annihilated like this past week, but he hadn't been playing like one of their big offseason acquisitions that they thought he was.
Yeah, I still think he's an elite player, and I believe he's going to get paid handsomely in free agency. I believe there's more teams out there who would take that personality and disposition.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.